gurning me prime, as lazy as can be. I stepped on board a Mersey flatter number 23.
Bamelan Productions proudly presents Scuttled, Episode 3, in association with the Museum of London Archaeology and the Arts and Humanities Research Council. Directed by James Steventon. Written by Ian Winterton. With Neil Bell, Isabel Haig, Janine Lanick, Katie Moore, and Paul Rigby. Produced by Kelly Griffiths, James Steventon, and Ian Winterton.
It went dark with cloud. I catch me foot in stern rail and went slurring right on deck. And I went head first down scuttle all and I nearly broke me neck.
Becca might not have run off that night after the fire, but we lost her all the same.
But she stayed with us. We let her go to school.
And she disappeared into them books. I found her weeping once, full of sorrow. I asked her,
"What's wrong, my girl? What's amiss?"
And she tells me,
"Eustace of Eye, she's dead."
A woman from a flaming book. But that was her way. Every night after supper, even in colder winter sometimes, she'd go up, sit on the hatch boards by herself and read. For years that was her way. Exchanging scarcely a word with us mortals, she lived in her head. In them stories. And that's where she was that night. Early autumn, September of 1877.
Aye. Moored up hundreds of yards down from the footbridge at Luddendon. Becca had just turned 18 and she was out there as she always was, on the hatchboards, a drop of brandy to warm her bones. And then she sits there for hours, reading. Our Paul's out. Alehouse with your uncle. 15-year-old Paul is. Too young, I reckon. But it wasn't beer you were interested in. Was a certain young landlord's daughter. And Harry, ever since he got burnt in the fire, he took to drink more than ever to take his mind off how he looked now. Half his face scarred, poor man. And we're in the cabin. Just the two of us, in bed together, but not sleeping.
A rare enough occurrence, that.
I love you, Eliza Ashworth.
And I love you and all.
What the hell was that?
Sounded like...
Mum! Dad, come quick! A woman's fallen in court!
Becca, pass us that mooring pole.
Help! Help!
Come give me hand, girl.
Help!
There he is!
Here, grab hold of the pole.
I landed him on the towpath like a giant fish. And he lays there, gulping for air like one and all. Looked in his 30s, skinny, like a rake. Losing his hair up top. And from the cut of his clothes, he's higher up the pecking order than us.
Who went?
Not too far above, though. I took him maybe for a clerk.
Which wasn't too far off, as it turned out.
You got him?
Aye.
I'm bringing the brandy.
It were a woman.
Huh?
It were a woman's scream.
Hey, you. Were there a lass with you?
Sir, were you alone? Is there a woman in there?
No. I was by myself.
But...
Must have been the gentleman here. He ain't exactly the most manly of men, is he?
I suppose. How come you fall off bridge?
I don't know.
But the wall on it don't make sense. Did you jump?
Let the poor man be, Becca. Brandy, sir.
Thank you. Oh. Oh.
Not the best, is it? Burns more than it warms.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Up you get.
Let us get you up onto the barge to dry off by the stove.
Well, that won't be necessary. I live nearby. Thank you.
Oh, don't be so daft. Come back.
He looks like he knows what he's doing.
Damn fool, he'll catch his death.
Now we can do. Come, back to the boat. Uncle Harry and our Paul will be here soon.
Aye. Becky, come on now.
It were a woman I heard, I swear.
She were right, of course. But we wasn't to know that. Moved on at first light, cargo coal this time, 60 tonnes per boat, bound for the foundry in Rippendon.
First full load in some months. We needed that money. Foxglove and Primrose in dire need of maintenance.
Went into dry dock in the Rochdale Basin. Tar Betty slathering Foxglove's hull in hot pitch.
Ah, Tar Betty. For as long as anyone can remember, she'd cook the tar for all the boats this side of Manchester.
Was from her I heard the news, as I'm bringing her out a cup of char.
Ooh, thank you. Grand. You heard her. Lass, dead. Fetched her out at Cuttack Bridge near Luddendon.
Luddendon?
Poor girl. Tangled in weeds. Hellfast. You know how it can be. Barges passing through lot brought her to the surface. She'd been in there a while, they reckon. Weeks. They don't know how many.
But we had a pretty good idea. 3 weeks. That's how long it had been since that night on the bridge. I went straight to Becca, who was darning clothes on Wharfside. Told her that she'd been right. She did hear a woman scream.
Ma'am, we've got to go fetch a constable.
You and Harry weren't too keen, as I recall.
With good reason. No friend of us canal folk, the police.
She's gone to the bloody peelers.
She had to.
Liza, you should have come to me first. Talked it through.
There was nowt to talk through. That skinny chap we fished out of the court, there was a woman went in with him. So why, eh? Why didn't he let on? And why'd he run off like that? 'Cause he pushed her in. Drowned her. It's murder, Thomas. Murder.
Murder, aye. And how long do you think it'll be before they fixes it on me or Tommy here, or even your Paul?
Don't talk soft, Harry.
He ain't talking soft, Liza, and you know it.
Aye, I knew it. The law served the people and most people. They like nowt better than blaming everything on navvies and barges.
You mark my words, Liza Ashworth. One of us will hang for this.
Oh, afternoon there, ladies. How can I help?
It's about the woman what was found.
In the canal at Luddendon.
Oh, aye, the suicide.
That's just it, Sergeant.
It wasn't no suicide.
Desk Sergeant's having none of it. But he takes a statement anyway. Says he'll pass it on to his superiors. We leave wondering if he'll even bother. But he did that, at least. Because before the sun's even up, there's someone on our deck, rapping his knuckles against our cabin door.
Tall bloke. All smart in his best police uniform. Stripes bright white on his shoulders and his buttons gleaming. More like a damn vicar than a policeman.
Who are you? What's going on?
Good morning, sir. No need for any alarm. I'm Superintendent Richard Pickering of the Rochdale Police. Apologies for my calling so early. But I know you canal folk like to get underway at break of day.
Aye. Not today, though. Boat's in for repairs.
Ah, that is propitious.
Eh?
Fortunate, I mean, that you'll be here another day.
Is it, eh? You want our Becca, right?
If Becca is one Rebecca Elizabeth Ashworth, aged 18, resident to this very boat, then... Yes, sir, I do. And, indeed, your good self. And your wife.
Pickering got us to tell all we could remember about the skinny fella. His appearance, his clothes, way he spoke, what class of gentleman we thought he was. But it was Becca's account he spent longest on. Those few moments after she heard a woman scream and fall in the cut.
So, you're certain you heard a woman scream?
I am, sir, yes.
And the splash? You've grown up on this boat, I suppose.
Not wrong with that.
She's had plenty of schooling and all.
That is evident. Your daughter is a bright, intelligent and educated young woman. All I mean to ascertain is that, having lived on the canal since birth, she's heard people fall or jump into the canal many times before.
Yes. Jumped in a few times myself.
Good, good. So, cast your mind back to the night in question. The splash you heard.
It was big. Like two folk fell in together.
And yet, only one of them emerged. The skinny man.
Before Dad got him out, he were thrashing about something awful.
We just assumed he couldn't swim.
I heard her. Not the scream as she fell. But after, when she were in the water, I shouted for Mum and Dad.
Mum! Dad, come quick! A woman's fallen in the car!
I can hear it now. He were drowning her.
Armed with what our Becker had told him, Superintendent Pickering set off, determined to find out who the poor girl in the canal was, and to bring that skinny chap in for questioning.
Hello?
Good morning, madam. Apologies, but I'm conducting inquiries into the death of a young woman in the area. Is your husband home?
No, he ain't. This about that drown, lass?
It is. Madam?
They say Lottie Bew's fella ain't seen her in a while.
Lottie Bew?
Though that ain't exactly unusual from what I hear.
You mean she... Apologies for my indelicacy. But you mean she is a woman of low morals?
No, but her husband, Peter Bew, he is. Ask anyone. Us wives, any road. He'll have done her in. You'll see.
Pickering did ask around. And all he heard from the women folk, the men not having the first clue about any of it, was how Peter Bew had a temper and was handy with his fists. Poor old Lottie Bew. Oftentimes folk could see her with a split lip or a black eye. And when it got really bad, she fled the house till his rage had subsided. Days at a time on occasion, sleeping out under the stars if the weather were fair, or booking a night at an inn if it wasn't.
Open up in the name of the law. Peter Bew, we have officers outside the building.
All right, all right. It's open, it's open.
Superintendent Pickering and his constables find Peter Bew lying on the floor, drunk, his hand curled round a jar of cheap grog, snarling at them. Only problem is, he has a full head of hair and is maybe the fattest man alive. And he says...
The dead lass. It's her, innit?
They drag him down the mortuary. Lord knows what the body were like by then. 2 weeks in the cut and laying out on the slab for days after. But Bew, he said it was her. Sobbed like a babe when he saw her. Left the police station right after and crawled inside the nearest whiskey bottle and never came out. A week later he was dead. Beaten to death while drunk, found in a back alley. We'll never know why for sure, but plenty folk in Luddendon took it on that he killed his wife. Didn't help that half the peelers were of that mind too, except Pickering. Now he knew Lottie Bew's name. He kept on knocking on doors, asking questions, piecing together her movements on her last day alive. A week later, we're at Luddendon, not far from the bridge where Lottie Bew was drowned. I'm hammering in a mooring pin. Our Paul, our Becker, holding the boat in place by the bank with the ropes.
Paul, tie it on.
Dad?
Good evening, Mr. Ashworth.
And I know right away from his face.
You found him.
Might I buy you a pint of beer, Mr. Ashworth? She was here. This very establishment, Mrs. Lottie Bew, that night.
Paul, me lad, me brother Harry, they were here and all. Paul's sweet, you see, on yon lass serving drinks.
A pretty young maid.
Katie, the landlord's daughter.
I see, well, your son, your brother, they can perhaps be added to the extensive list of witnesses who saw Lottie Bew in here that night, sat alone in the corner, eating a bowl of soup, and a man who came and sat with her. Uninvited by all accounts. His advances, unwanted. A skinny man, between 30 and 40 years of age, balding, a man many recognised as passing through the village once a month. A Mr. Jonathan Roberts, rent collector for one of Rochdale's biggest landlords. And on the night in question, Mr. Ashworth, He was seen leaving this public house just moments after Lottie Bew.
He followed her, tried to have his way with her.
That is my working supposition. Mr. Ashworth, I've asked you here because I know you have good cause to mistrust the police, and that the sooner you get your cargo to its destination, the sooner you get paid. But I need you and your family to look at this Jonathan Roberts and tell me if he's the man you pulled from the canal.
You have him?
Tomorrow, I'll arrest him at his place of work in Rochdale, travelling there by train, first thing. And I'd like you, Mrs. Ashworth and Rebecca, to accompany me.
By train? Sorry, no.
But Mr. Ashworth...
No, our cargo. Like you said, sooner we deliver, sooner we get paid. That comes first, always. So, no train.
You couldn't tell him the truth, of course. That trains frighten you.
I never even told you that.
You didn't have to, Thomas Ashworth.
You sure is your man, this rent collector?
It all seems to fit.
Then he can stew in your cell and wait for us.
And wait he did. Clear week before we got back to Rochdale. Went to the station at night. We weren't going to waste any daylight on him.
Come forward, Roberts.
He stands there, hands lightly gripping the bars, staring out at us. And he's smiling, like he hasn't a care in the world. And our Becca, brave as you like, strides right up to him, studies his face.
It's him.
Yeah, it were him all right. Not a shadow of a doubt.
No doubt at all. But he didn't seem to see me, or you. Only our Becca. He stares at her, still smiling, unblinking, leering, drinking her in. Our bonny daughter. And she, for her credit, holds his gaze. For as long as she can bear, at least.
Mum, Dad, let's go.
Come on, love.
Becca hurries out, looking close to tears, and you go after her. Me turning to follow. I shoot a look back at Roberts. He nods at me, like he was any polite gentleman you might see in the street. That's when I knew.
He'll walk.
Of course he will. Gent like him ain't going to hang off the word of one of us.
We don't know that, Harry.
Why take the risk? There's still time for them to fit you up for something you ain't done.
Don't talk daft.
We'll be out of pocket and all. Day off of work, at least.
Dad, a woman is dead, and we all saw the man has likely killed her. So we go to court, do our duty. As a family.
Of course we will. Won't we, Thomas?
Yes. Proud of Becca, I was. I'm shamed of myself, truth be told.
Listening to Harry's nonsense.
Except, of course, it weren't all nonsense.
Your face next day when Pickering tells you where the trial was being held. County Sessions House, Liverpool. And only way to get there?
Was the bloody train.
This is us, Liverpool train, carriage D. Come on, Tom.
I'm coming.
Where's our Becca gone?
Becca!
You're too busy summoning up the courage to board the train, so you don't see her. Becca, a ways down the platform. There's the crowd of folk gathered to see off their loved ones, and she's waving at one of them. There's a wave back. A young man. Handsome. Blonde-haired. And I know straight away, it's Matthew, workhouse boy, back from London. I don't say out to you, of course. Aside from the trial hanging over us, there's the fact that you go green as soon as the train pulls out of the station. You ain't going to be sick, are you?
Oh, just be quiet, woman, please.
Becca, of course, was entranced.
Oh my goodness, the field's slipping by so quickly. I feel giddy. How fast do you suppose we're travelling?
25 miles per hour, I heard.
Ain't natural.
Oh, Dad.
It was happiest we'd seen her in years. Strange to think that happy memory coming off the back of something so grim.
Of course, what I'd seen on the platform, where she'd waved at that Matthew, I had a good idea why she was in high spirits. Young, on a train, and in love.
Journey back, she wasn't so full of joy.
No. We weren't prepared for how many folk could turn out to watch the trial.
Oh, my giddy aunt.
Superintendent. Mr. Ashworth, Mrs. Ashworth, Miss Rebecca. I trust you had a good journey.
What's everyone doing here?
It's a murder trial, my child.
I can't do it.
What's that?
I can't speak. Not in front of all these people. Dad.
She clung on to me, like she used to as a little girl. And I hugged her tight.
Hey.
Was the last time I ever did.
This bunch of gawpers. Ignore them and speak the truth. What you saw, what you were. Do it for her. That young woman he drowned, who weren't much different from us. Lottie Bew.
Yeah, Lottie Bew.
Think of it like one of your stories. And you, Becca, you're the what's it? Hero.
The heroine, Dad.
Aye, the heroine.
Here's the magistrate.
Bring in the accused.
Roberts looks the same as he had down in the cells, smiling, eyes sparkling like he was cleverer than everyone else. And it were that, more than aught else, that made our Becca determined to play her part, to get justice for Lottie Bew.
But the barrister for the defence, a preening, self-regarding peacock of a man, dressed in a suit that had cost ordinary folk a year's wage, Mr. Enoch Oakshott, his name was, and he had other ideas.
Superintendent Pickering laid out his case, reading statements or calling forward folk who'd seen Roberts harassing Lottie in the alehouse or seen him follow her out. All through it, Oakshott brings it back to one unfortunate but indisputable fact. No one saw any murder taking place. And that, of course, brought us to Becca. Sole witness.
It was him as stands there now. He were the man my father pulled from the cut.
The cut?
The cut, aye, canal.
And you saw him fall into the canal, yes? From the bridge?
I didn't see him, no. I heard the splash and the cry afore it. Only it were him as screamed, it were a woman.
So you contend?
It were a woman.
Tell me, Miss Ashworth, what were you doing sat up on deck that night?
Reading.
Reading? Your Bible, I assume.
No, though I read the good book often enough. I were reading a Charles Dickens, His Great Expectations.
Reading outside?
'Tis my habit at the end of most days.
Your habit? On the night in question, it was cold, was it not?
I had my shawl around me, and we don't feel cold like you city folk.
No, you don't. Because you have other ways of warming yourself. A tot of whiskey, or gin, or mayhap some strong spirit concocted in an illegal still. You are under oath, Miss Ashworth.
And it were then he got her. She telt the truth.
I had a glass of brandy with me, aye. But it's no crime.
It's no crime, no. Though I would posit that for a girl as young as yourself to be nightly imbibing brandy, it speaks to negligent parenting.
It were just one glass, sucked over several hours.
Oh, Miss Ashworth. Miss Ashworth. One glass of brandy. Are we really to believe that? Well, I, for one, do not. And I would wager I am not alone. Who here believes her? You see, Miss Ashworth, everyone here, they've seen too often with their own eyes the drunkenness of the Irish navigator or waterway gypsies such as yourself.
That's no more case than with other people.
And for you to claim you drank just one glass of brandy, well, to me that seems so implausible, so obviously a fabrication, that one can only come to the conclusion that, in fact, the counter is true. You had the bottle with you,
no,
did you
sir.
Not? And you topped it up throughout the evening.
That ain't true. You're just sprouting lies.
Suppositions, Miss Ashworth. Reasonable suppositions.
But...
She just couldn't take no more. Broke down in the dock, quietly sobbing. What could I do but run to her?
Becca!
That weren't the problem. I was.
Shame on you. She's just a lass trying to do right by a murdered girl. Shame on you.
Sit back down, Mr. Ashworth.
I shan't, till he apologises.
Mr. Ashworth, while we have you, may I ask you a question? On the night in question, while your daughter was reading, and your 15-year-old son was at the alehouse with his uncle, a known drunk, were you and your wife, perchance, also drinking?
No, but... well, maybe. Yeah, we'd had a couple of ales.
Oh, only a couple. You, Mr. Ashworth, and your wife, you were laying in a drunken slumber, were you not? As you are wont to do most nights.
Bloody lies! Come here and say that! I'll knock your bastard head off!
Sergeant, remove Mr. Ashworth from my courthouse!
That were that. Now, we said, from then on, counted for out. And Jonathan Roberts, he was found not guilty. Walked away a free man, just like Uncle Harry said he would. And on Roberts' face, as he shakes Mr. Oakshott's plump hand, that same smile as we saw in the cells, arrogant, laughing at us. He's getting away with murder, and he don't care who knows it.
And Becca, that day in court made her mind up. Last train of the day, and he's waiting for her on the platform, Matthew. And Becca, she ain't hiding him from us no more.
Mam, Dad, you remember Matthew from the fire?
Aye, I do. We owe you the life of our Paul.
He's grown to be a credit to you, I hear. Engaged to be wed.
To his Katie, aye.
You ran off to London?
I did, sir, yes.
And you're back up here now?
Not permanent, no, sir.
What's with her, sir?
He's come for me, Dad. Has been on and off for a year now.
I have a steady job, Mr. Ashworth, sir. Clerk for a shipping company, West India Docks.
Dad, we're getting married.
Married?
If you, that is, grant us permission.
Well, we're getting married. And then I'm going with Matthew.
To London?
No, to New York City.
America?
Oh, Lord.
We have passage booked. We're going, whether you give us your blessing or no.
I do. My blessing. You have it.
Oh, Daddy, I love you.
What else could I do? She'd have run away otherwise, and we got to have the wedding. Same church as me and thee. Had one last week. Ain't the same, no. Damn him. That Matthew.
He's made our Becca happier than we ever could. A school teacher in New York City. And mother to four children. Weren't for her the canal. And Matthew, he saved our Paul from the fire. Let him grow, become a man, marry his Katie and have the twins.
The twins. The flaming twins, Iris and Daisy.
And in me prime, as lazy as can be, I stepped on board a Mersey flatter number 23.
You have been listening to Scuttled, episode 3, directed by James Steventon, starring Christopher Eccleston, Joyce Branner, Becky Kershaw, Kimberly Cochran, Jonathan Carley, Adam Grayson, Stephen Hillman, Annie Connell Welsh and James Steventon. Featuring Isabella Arrowsmith, Bailey Cockcroft, Katie Rowan, Elliot Winterton, and the little voices of St. Edward's Primary School, Rochdale. Title music by Jennifer Reed, with archaeological consultancy from Kelly Griffiths, based on archaeological excavations in Rochdale, England.
He said, now lad, be careful thou, well he not kettle off. That better frame and start pumping, for I think we've sprung a leak, and I wish I'd never gone boating for me living. For